When you think about how something as complex as, say, a modern power plant operates, it's pretty easy to feel a bit overwhelmed. But underneath all the hardware, the pipes and turbines, there's this really sophisticated layer of automation. Keeps everything humming
It
along.
really does.
So today we're doing a deep dive into the fundamental components of that automation, specifically in energy technology. We've got this great technical document we've been looking through.
Exactly. And our mission really is to break down those essential building blocks,
Okay.
try to demystify some of the jargon,
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
and really get a handle on what makes these systems work and maybe where the field is heading.
Right. Okay, so to get started, let's look at the big picture. Our source lays out this five-level hierarchy for automation in process control. Can you sort of paint a picture of that structure for us?
Sure. Think of it like layers in a cake, maybe.
Yeah.
Starting right at the bottom, level one, that's your field components.
Okay, field components.
Yeah, the actual sensors, the actuators out there in the plant, things like transmitters measuring pressure or temperature,
Right.
remote I/O units. We'll talk more about those, but
Yeah.
they're basically connection points.
Okay.
Local control panels, the motors driving stuff. That's level one.
The hands-on stuff.
Exactly. Then level two, this is where the real-time control happens. PLCs and DCS basis racks.
PLCCS.
Programmable logic controllers and distributed control systems. The brains, essentially. They process data, send commands.
Got it. Brains at level two. What's next?
Level three. Moving up, you get the engineering and process operator stations.
So computers.
Typically, yeah.
Yeah.
Workstations where engineers design the control logic and operators, monitor and manage the actual process as it's running.
Okay. So if you're looking at, say, a typical boiler installation, it sounds like those first three levels, field stuff, brains, operator screens, those are absolutely critical.
Precisely. Yeah, levels one through three, that's your essential automation backbone for controlling something like a boiler.
But there are five levels.
Right. The hierarchy goes further, more into the business side of things. Level four introduces MES PCs.
MES?
Yep, manufacturing execution systems.
Okay, what does that do?
Think of MES as maybe the foreman on the factory floor. It takes the big production plan from like the head office
Right.
and tells the machines what to do, tracks their progress in real time. It's this crucial link between the real-time control we just talked about,
Levels one to three.
yeah, and the higher level business operations.
Interesting. So MES sounds like it bridges a pretty significant gap then. How does it actually add value to, both the control side and the business systems?
Well, what's really fascinating, I think, is how it boosts efficiency. It takes data from ERP systems, we'll get to those, like order info or inventory,
Okay.
and combines it with the real-time data coming from the control systems.
Ah, okay.
This lets you do things like optimize production schedules, use resources better, track quality and performance more effectively. It adds this layer of intelligence, really.
So it helps both the plant floor and the planning office.
Exactly. Benefits both sides.
And then level five, the very top, ERP PCs. Now, ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning, that sounds more familiar from a general business context.
Exactly right. Most people might know ERP. It handles the core business functions, financials, inventory, purchasing, sales, HR, all that stuff.
Standard business software.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But what's relevant for our discussion is that these ERP systems can also perform detailed energy calculations.
Ah.
So they give you that comprehensive view of, resource consumption and costs across the whole organization.
That makes a lot of sense. A really clear structure from the sensor all the way up to the financial report. Okay, so now that we have the landscape, the source document gets into this comparison between DCS and PLCS CADA systems. You hear these terms thrown around a lot sometimes, interchangeably. What were the original distinctions?
Yeah, they definitely get mixed up sometimes. But historically, their roles were quite different. DCS, distributed control systems, they were mainly designed for complex analog processes. Think continuous flow stuff, like in refineries or chemical plants.
Lots of temperatures, pressures, flows.
Exactly. And the distributed part meant control was spread out over multiple units, coordinated by a supervisor system.
Okay. And PLCs.
PLCs, programmable logic controllers. They started out more for high-speed digital control, manufacturing, machine automation, assembly lines, that kind of thing.
On, off, fast switching.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Often localized control for specific machines. And SCADA,
SCADA, right.
supervisory control and data acquisition, that often acted as like a higher level monitoring and control layer on top of PLCs. especially for things spread out geographically like pipelines or the power grid.
Okay, so different origins. But the source says there's been a big shift, particularly in the hardware. How have things sort of converged?
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. The underlying hardware has become, well, remarkably similar. Yeah. Whether you look inside a modern DCS or a PLC SCADA system today, you'll often find the same kinds of components. Modular racks.
Okay.
Holding I.O. cards. Those are the interfaces to the field devices, right? Input-output.
Got it.
CPUs, the processors running the logic, communication cards for talking to each other, all often running on PC-based software now. Figure 2 in the document shows us really well that shared hardware base.
So under the hood, they look more and more alike. What about what they can do? Have the functions blurred too?
Absolutely. Functionally, the lines are definitely getting blurrier. Modern PLCs, they can handle complex analog regulation just fine now.
No kidding.
Yeah. And many have batch control software too for process stuff. And conversely, DCS systems, they can easily do high-speed digital control and are even used for fail-safe, safety-critical tasks now.
Huh. That's a pretty major evolution then. The document specifically mentions the boiler industry. What's the sort of typical setup there now with this blurring?
Well, in the boiler world, you still tend to see PLCs handling the really critical safety functions. Burner management, for instance.
Yeah.
Making sure the burners start and stop safely.
Makes sense. Safety first.
Right. And then a DCS might be positioned sort of above that PLC layer to manage the more complex analog control loops, regulating temperature, pressure, flow, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But even that division is getting more flexible. It's not a hard, fast rule anymore.
So if the hardware is similar and the software capabilities are overlapping more and more, what actually drives the choice between a DCS and a PLC SCADA system these days? What are the deciding factors moving forward?
That's the crucial point, isn't it? According to our source, the main drivers are increasingly becoming, number one, cost.
Ah, money.
Always. Both the initial purchase price and the total lifecycle cost, maintenance, upgrades, everything.
Right.
And number two, vendor support. How good is the support you get from the company selling it?
So with the tech being so similar.
Exactly. With the fundamental hardware and software being pretty comparable, these more practical things, cost and support, they're taking center stage.
Which could, I suppose, lead to more commoditization, pressure on vendors to compete on price and service.
That's a very likely outcome, yeah.
Yeah.
Vendors will probably need to differentiate more through specialized features or, like you said, service, rather than just core functionality.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, shifting gears slightly. Another vital piece mentioned is remote I.O. systems. What exactly are these and why are they important?
Right, remote I.O. Think of it as distributing the connection points, the inputs and outputs of your control system.
Spreading them out.
Yeah. Instead of running every single wire from every sensor and valve all the way back to one big central PLC or DCS rack.
Which sounds like a nightmare.
It can be. So with remote I.O., you put these smaller I.O. modules closer to the actual devices out in the field.
Okay.
Or even inside things like motor control centers, the MCCs that handle electric motors.
And how do they talk back to the main controller?
These remote modules communicate back using industrial networks, often called bus systems. Figure 3 in the source gives a good visual of this kind of decentralized setup.
So less of a central hub with wires going everywhere, more like local data points chatting back to the main brain.
That's a great way to put it, exactly.
What are the big wins with that approach? What are the advantages?
Well, several big ones. By distributing the I.O., you can make your central PLC or DCS racks much smaller and simpler.
Less hardware in the control room.
Right. You might only need the main processor and communication cards there. Plus, remote I.O. can mean simpler wiring overall.
Oh.
Potentially lower installation costs because you're running network cables instead of huge bundles of individual wires.
Cheaper cable runs.
Often, yeah. And maybe easier troubleshooting too, since you can sometimes isolate problems down to specific remote modules.
The document also mentions these remote units can be pretty tough.
Oh yeah, that's critical. Many are designed for harsh industrial environments. They often have high IP ratings. Ingress protection. Like IP65 means it's dust tight and protected against water spray. So you can mount them right out in the field.
Wow, okay.
And you can also get explosion proof versions for hazardous areas. Things rated like XSM, which is encapsulated or housed in X-in enclosures. That's increased safety,
yeah.
Containing EXA signals, which are intrinsically safe, very low energy, to prevent sparks.
Necessary in many energy environments. And the communication networks, the bus systems they use, any common examples?
Source points out a couple of widely used industrial bus systems. Profibus is a big one. Aussie Bus is another. These protocols handle the digital communication reliably between the remote I/O and the main control system.
Okay, got it. So we've covered the big hierarchy, the DCS versus PLC evolution and remote I/O. The last category the source talks about is dedicated control systems. What are these?
Right. Dedicated controllers. These are basically compact, self-contained units designed for very specific, often critical control tasks.
Not general purpose, like a PLC.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially common for rotating equipment turbines, diesel engines, gas engines. Instead of using a big PLC or DCS, these have their own dedicated I/O and a processor programmed with just the specific control logic needed for that one piece of machinery.
Can you give us an example? Make it a bit more concrete.
Sure. Think about controlling the fuel valves on a gas turbine.
Okay, critical job.
Very. The fuel flow needs constant, precise adjustment based on, well, lots of things. The desired speed, maximum and minimum speed limits to avoid damage, the exhaust gas temperature for efficiency and emissions,
right,
even what type of fuel you're burning. As Thais 4 and 5 in the document show, a dedicated controller is specifically built to handle all that complex real-time logic without the overhead of a full PLC or DCS.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. A tailored solution for a demanding specific task. The source also mentions steam turbines. Is it a similar idea there?
Very similar principle, yeah. Focused control. For a steam turbine, a dedicated unit like in figures 6 and 7 might mainly regulate the steam inlet valve.
Controlling the speed.
Precisely. Controlling the turbine speed based on the target set point and the actual measured speed.
Mm-hmm.
And these units are often designed to be installed right near the turbine itself.
Oh, interesting. Why?
Simplifies the wiring, ensures really fast response times for that critical control.
So we've gone from the really broad five-level architecture all the way down to these highly specialized, dedicated controllers. It's genuinely fascinating to see how all these different components actually work together.
Absolutely. We've touched on the hierarchical structure, the evolving relationship and convergence between DCS and PLC SCADA.
Right, the blurring lines.
The real advantages of distributing I/O out closer to the field with remote systems and the efficiency you get from using these dedicated controllers for specific critical equipment.
And I think the real aha moment, for me at least, is seeing how these aren't just separate boxes. They form this intricate coordinated system that allows us to safely and efficiently manage these incredibly complex energy processes.
That's exactly. It's the system view.
Yeah.
And if you take that idea and think about the future,
yeah,
the constant improvements in these technologies, the increasing intelligence being embedded.
AI and machine learning creeping in.
Potentially, yeah. It leads to a really interesting question, maybe something for you, the listener, to think about. Considering this trend of increasing integration, sophistication, intelligence, what might the future actually hold for truly autonomous energy plants?
Wow.
And importantly, what will the evolving role of human oversight be in environments that become that intelligent and interconnected? It's definitely something to ponder.